let me just mention some famous legal battles you are familiar with. O.J. Simpson, Scott Peterson, Tommy Lee, Michael Jackson, Terry Schiavo, Marv Albert, and on and on and on and on and on. What do all of these cases have in common? Well, among the things they have in common is the woman who has just sat down in the studio next to me here. Her name is Gloria Allred, who has compiled her three decades in the legal profession into a brand new book called Fight Back and Win, My 30-Year Fight Against Injustice and How You Can Win Your Own Battles. Welcome to KMOX, Gloria.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be here, and it's great to be in St. Louis.
Nice to have you here. Are celebrity trials harder?
It is harder in a celebrity case because, Paul, for example, in the O.J. Simpson case, it seems as though the prosecution has to prove not only guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, but guilt beyond any doubt whatsoever, almost, to a virtual certainty, which, of course, is a lot more than the law actually requires.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in that case, I represented the family of Nicole Brown Simpson. And, of course, they were the family of the murder victim, so they were victims themselves. And we had a number of challenges representing them because, of course, the defense or supporters of the defense were constantly trying to attack not only the murder victim, but in addition, members of the family who might be witnesses, and to attempt to denigrate them and to destroy them. And, you know, that is really sad, to go through the trauma of losing a loved one and then have to go through a public attack as well, especially where they're not supposed to talk back because they're supposed to protect the integrity of their testimony.
And didn't the defense there, Johnny Cochran and his team, even try to get the Brown family barred from the courtroom?
They did, Paul. And in fact, I had to go before Judge Ito and argue that they should not be excluded from the courtroom, that the family of the murder victim should be permitted to stay. And the idea that I even had to argue for that, that it wasn't a right, was to me preposterous. You know, I said the family of O.J. Simpson could sit in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
They could not be excluded.
Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't the family of the murder victim sit there? And I talk in the book, Fight Back and Win, also about what I believe went wrong with the criminal case and why the prosecution did not prevail.
All right, let's name some names here. Who's at fault? Gil Garcetti, Marcia Clark, Christopher Darden?
Well, definitely Gil Garcetti, because he was the boss man.
Mm-hmm.
He's the man at the top.
Yep.
He was, I think, micromanaging this case, but he's certainly setting the policy as the district attorney of Los Angeles County at the time. And I think he made a number of decisions, for example, like not seeking the death penalty. And had he sought the death penalty, he would have been able to obtain a more law and order oriented jury, because the common wisdom is that if a DA seeks the death penalty, then he can ask the jury where they stand on the death penalty, or prospective jurors. Generally, jurors who are pro death penalty, that is, they could apply it in an appropriate case. Those jurors are generally more law and order oriented. Whereas if he can't ask the question because he's not seeking the death penalty, then he may end up with jurors that are less likely to be pro-prosecution and to convict.
And what did you think of Marcia Clark and Christopher Darden?
Well, I think that Marcia Clark is very bright and she tried very hard. She was not liked by a lot of the jurors. You know, I don't know whether that's because she was a woman, an assertive woman, or what. Chris Darden, I think I like Chris Darden, but, you know, I think that he was kind of his hands were tied by a lot of the decisions that the district attorney made. And obviously the glove decision and Johnny Cochran, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he outfoxed him. And that was very, very difficult because, you know, I think that Chris Darden should never have had that glove demonstration.
Is it unfair to say that their prosecution was inept?
I think it's fair to say that, in my opinion, that the decisions that were made were corrupted by political decisions. The legal decisions were corrupted by political decisions, which is always a problem. For example, not seeking the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
He had a meeting, Garcetti, with a number of leaders of the African-American community. Who came out afterwards and said on television that they'd had the meeting. One of them, by the way, was Johnny Cochran, who at the time said he was not representing O.J. Simpson.
Right.
And they said they asked him to seek the death penalty. And then I said, okay, well, then have a meeting with those of us who think you should seek the death penalty. and, you know, battered women's advocates, those who want to present that argument. Personally, I didn't think the DA should be meeting with either side on that issue. That's a legal decision. It's not a decision that's made by the community. But if you're going to meet with one side, then meet with the other.
Right.
He wouldn't meet with those of us who wanted to present the argument on the other side. I think what he was trying to do was curry favor for his next election with that particular segment of the community with whom he had met. And that is dangerous when you allow politics to influence a legal decision.
Yeah.
I think it corrupts it.
Yeah, I think that that whole prosecution was inept. I'm only saying that as an outsider who only knows about the case from mm-hmm. the outside and from watching it on television.
Now, you contrast that with the Scott Peterson case,
mm-hmm.
of course, where Scott Peterson, who was not a celebrity before, he committed the double murder of Lacey Peterson and his unborn son, Connor. But he became a celebrity as a result of the case.
Yes. Now, or he became famous. I don't know that he became a celebrity.
Well, he became infamous, I should say.
That's correct.
Absolutely.
Infamous is a good word for it.
He became infamous. Now, there, they were able to get a prosecution. At first, everybody, you know, a lot of defense attorneys were saying, commentators were saying, oh, you'll never get a conviction. You're inept, DAs. But it turns out that they were able to, slowly and surely. And I think that my client, Amber Fry, the girlfriend of Scott Peterson, whom I discuss in the book as well,
mm-hmm.
who had so much courage, who called the police, who tape recorded her telephone calls with Scott Peterson after Lacey went missing. And she did so only to help find a missing pregnant woman, because that was the right thing to do. She was a tremendous help in getting a prosecution to be successful in getting the conviction for double murder.
Talking with Gloria Allred, her new book is called Fight Back and Win. And by the way, she'll be at the St. Louis Public Library in the Central West End tonight in Euclid and Lindell, 7 o'clock tonight, signing copies of the book, selling copies of the book as well. That's the important reason she's in St. Louis.
And talking about the book. And
talking about all of these sort of things. I always see you in the public eye. Do you spend time in court?
Yes, I do. I've been practicing law for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And our law firm has won hundreds of millions of dollars for victims of sexual harassment, sex discrimination, race discrimination, age discrimination, sexual orientation discrimination.
But is that you, Gloria Allred, actually in there making the case for your firm and for your clients?
It's me. It's also my partners and my associates. Everything we take, Paul, we take as a law firm. None of us take it as an individual. We take it as a law firm of Allred, Morocco, and Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been fighting these Davida and Goliath battles for 30 years. We are generally representing the typical person against the rich, the famous, the powerful, government, large corporations. We've sued sexual predators, high-profile killers. We've sued child sexual abusers, sexual harassers, and we've been able to win. And in my book, I talk about the people have more power to win justice in their own lives than they've ever realized.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be creative, and you have to think about, you know, what resources you have, and a lot of other factors. And there are things you can do without an attorney as well as with an attorney.
But we talked about Scott Peterson becoming famous or infamous because of the case. It seems to me, from having seen you many, many times in the public eye, that part of your strategy is to ramp up that spotlight for the cases on behalf of your clients. But also, if we can put more light on the story and more people pay attention and more cameras and microphones can be paying attention to a story, that's good for your client. Is that always good for your client?
Well, let's take the case in point that you talk about, Paul, because it's a fair question. It's not always good.
It's not a criticism.
If it's not good for the client, I don't do it.
Well, that's what I'm curious about.
Simple as that. But now, in the case of Amber Fry, there you have the girlfriend of Scott Peterson. She didn't know that Scott was married, and she was deceived.
Mm-hmm.
And had she known he was married, she would not have had the relationship with him. And then when she found out that he was married and had a missing pregnant wife, she called the police and tape recorded all of those phone calls. And by the way, never knew that they would be broadcast on radio and television to millions of people, or even broadcast in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
She thought it was just for the police to listen to see what information they could get. Now, in the public eye, she was being taken apart. There were a lot of lies and misconceptions being put out there by supporters of the defense, hoping, I think, to try to destroy her so that when ultimately she would take the witness stand, she wouldn't be credible. And so one of the reasons that I was out there was because Amber could not speak out. She had to protect the integrity of her testimony. And in addition, ultimately, she was the subject of a gag order, which I was not the subject of, although Mark Garagos tried to include me in it. He was unsuccessful. And then he tried to include me from the courtroom, and he was unsuccessful. But in any event, so I had to get out there and set the record straight, because I didn't want there to be a situation where The operation was successful, but the patient died.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he was convicted, but Amber Fry's reputation was destroyed in the process. Because if that's the case, then why would any person come forward into a high-profile criminal case and offer to cooperate with law enforcement? If they're going to be destroyed in the process, why should anybody do that?
Right. So part of it is not just getting them the legal representation, but also getting them the reputation representation.
Well, yes, Paul. And, you know, in a famous case, United States versus Gentile, a United States Supreme Court case, the Supreme Court of the United States points out that it's a lawyer's duty not only to represent a client's best interest in the courtroom, but also outside of the courtroom. And so that's what I did. And also with Amber, there were other things that had to be done as well. For example, someone was trying to publish topless photos of her.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to go and we worked with another law firm to get an injunction against that person, a court order preventing the sale, the distribution, the publication of those photos of Amber, which she did not consent to have published or disseminated to anybody for anything. And so, again, in a criminal case that's high profile, often people will attempt to exploit the witnesses. And I was just not going to allow that to be done to Amber because she was a wonderfully courageous young woman, a single mom, and a person dedicated to doing the right thing. And I felt that it was both an honor and a duty to support her, to advise her, and to represent her.
Does the jury pool here in the 21st century make your job tougher or easier?
Well, I think, you know, jurors do listen to the court of public opinion. They do. But a judge and a defense attorney and a prosecutor have a duty in the voir dire process, in the screening process, when they're asking questions of prospective jurors, to ask them, you know, if they've read or heard anything about the case. And I imagine almost everybody here listens to you, Paul,
uh-huh,
on KMOX radio. And but can they set whatever they've heard aside and still be fair and impartial and judge the case only by the evidence presented in the courtroom?
Mm-hmm.
So if they say they can, and if they can, then you have a fair jury. And as much as the defense, you know, said, oh, the trial's unfair in the O.J. Simpson case, guess what? They got an acquittal. So
mm-hmm.
My sense is that O.J. Simpson thought that trial was fair, although I must point out that in the civil case, that jury found that he was liable,
right,
for the deaths of Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman. And so maybe he didn't think he got such a fair trial there.
Has the Brown family seen any money?
No, because the family actually didn't sue. The family, the case was on behalf of the estate of Nicole Brown Simpson. Ironically, the beneficiaries of that estate are the children,
mm-hmm,
of O.J. Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
So Lou Brown, the father of Nicole, was doing that as the executor of the estate to try to protect the assets of his grandchildren, Sidney and Justin.
And have the kids gotten any money? Has the estate gotten
a penny
out of this
guy? I didn't represent the family in that civil case. Again, it was for the estate. But I think that very little, if anything, has actually been collected from Mr. Simpson since he's been sheltering his pension, which he has every right to do, unfortunately,
right,
under the law, or
yep,
fortunately.
Yep.
And since he moved to Florida, which has very favorable homestead laws.
Mm-hmm.
And, so,
and all the expenses of looking for the real killers. That's taking a lot of his money up, too.
Yeah. You know, I think if he just looked in the mirror, it would save him a lot of time and money.
They don't have mirrors
so
on the golf courses he goes to. I want to go back to this point, though, that I raised about the jury pool. The information age is expanding geometrically on a regular basis. The blogosphere is part of it. 24-hour news networks galore are out there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's more information out there that people have access to on a daily basis. Is that making the job of a defense attorney, or even as a prosecuting attorney, does that make it tougher for you to represent your client because all of that stuff is getting out there into the potential jury pool?
Well, I represent the victims, and so I think, you know, as long as I can speak out and protect victims' rights, I'm okay. I actually have only been subject to one gag order in 30 years, and I'm under one right now. And it's in a murder case in Northern California. So all I can say is I'm under that,
mm-hmm,
and it's the Dileski case. And I guess I can't say anything more than that, except that I have a petition for review before the California Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And they will decide at the end of the month whether to accept my case and the issue of whether or not an attorney for a potential witness can be gagged. So it's very interesting, and I'm just holding my breath to see what the California Supreme Court does
Are you an attorney on one side or the other, or is it a witness?
I represent a potential witness in the case.
A potential witness, okay.
And the district attorney has sought to gag me.
Gloria Allred's book is called Fight Back and Win, My 30-Year Fight Against Injustice and How You Can Win Your Own Battle. She'll be selling and signing copies of the book tonight at the St. Louis Public Library in the Central West End at Euclid and Lindell, 7 o'clock tonight, and we'll be back with more. Lots to talk about with Ms. Allred here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. In the studio today with Gloria Allred, famed victims' rights attorney. She's written a book about her three-decade career on the legal front lines. It's called Fight Back and Win. Gloria, a couple of weeks ago, I got an email from a listener that sparked a rather intense conversation on the show, and actually referenced one of the cases that you were involved in, the Hunter Tylo case. Mm-hmm. This woman wrote to me after hearing that Elizabeth Vargas, the newly named anchorwoman of ABC mm-hmm. World News Tonight, is pregnant. And the woman who wrote to me said, you know, I am a woman, and I know women have every right to their reproductive rights, and I don't have a problem with anybody deciding to do that. But I think that Elizabeth Vargas may have hurt the cause of women in the workplace by taking the ABC job at a time when she probably knew that she was pregnant. And now she's endangered all of us who are going to have to fight for our rights in the workplace. And I talked about this, and we got quite a few calls about it. And I referenced your case, the Hunter Tylo case. And for my listeners who may not remember that, she was an actress who was on Bold and the Beautiful and then got a job on Melrose Place to play what I'm sure Aaron Spelling would like to call the virginal ingenue. And then Ms. Tylo was pregnant, and the Aaron Spelling Productions people said, well, you can't have this job if you're pregnant. And they either threatened to or actually did fire her, you tell me.
They did terminate her,
and you sued and got a multi-million-dollar verdict in her favor. So what is your reaction to the woman by the name of Joanne was the one who emailed me about the Elizabeth Vargas situation. How would you reply to her?
Well, I don't know why she thinks it hurts the cause of women for women to become pregnant. You know, pregnancy is not a crime. It's not a communicable disease, and it is not a reason that someone should not be able to have their job or be promoted, and it's not a reason to terminate anybody. And we showed that in the Hunter Tylo case. You know, no one should have to wear the scarlet P, so to speak, for pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And in Hunter's case, which I talk about in the book Fight Back and Win, she had entered into a contract for her role on Melrose Place, and they felt that her pregnancy was a material change in her appearance such that they could terminate her. But we feel and felt and proved that it was unlawful to terminate her because she was pregnant, that that would be a violation of the law. And, I mean, a lot of naysayers predicted that we would not win that case, as they have predicted that in many cases and had been wrong. And we proved that Hunter could be both bold and beautiful
mm-hmm.
and pregnant all mm-hmm. at the same time. And as a matter of fact, in that case, it was so great. It was so exciting in the courtroom because Hunter was on the witness stand, and every day there was a lot of press there and coming in every day commenting on how gorgeous she is, which she is a very beautiful woman
mm-hmm.
and very fit. And everybody was commenting on how she looked and how she dressed. And she was on the witness stand, and we asked her, and this was, of course, you know, I think a couple of years after she was terminated for pregnancy.
By the time it got through the court system.
Yes, by the time we actually got to the date of trial. And she was sitting there, and we asked her, by the way, are you pregnant now? And she said, well, yes, I am. And, well, how pregnant are you? And I think she said 8 months. And there was a gasp in the courtroom from all the reporters. They went, you could hear the oxygen almost being sucked out of the room because nobody knew that she was pregnant.
She didn't look like what an 8-month pregnant woman would look like to them.
Exactly. And so, you know, I think that helped in the case. And also when Heather Locklear, who was the star of the show, testified, she had gotten pregnant, but they had been able to shoot around her.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lisa Rinna, who took the place of Hunter, not that anybody could take Hunter's place, but took the role that she was to play, she had also got pregnant. And they had been able to shoot around her. Of course, it was like a job security device. Once we sued, you know, then they weren't going to terminate other people because of the pregnancy.
Aaron Spelling Productions could never fire another woman for pregnancy under any circumstances, and the rest of Hollywood got the message from you.
Yeah, so then we, you know, anyway, I think that the other side alienated the jury a lot when they put up a big chart of Hunter and how much weight she had gained each month while she was pregnant, as though she was a piece of meat getting bigger all the time. Anyway, the jury found in our favor, and I think, you know, we created a lot of buzz in Hollywood with our multi-million-dollar verdict, and I think that a lot of the producers understood, you know what, it's going to be too costly to terminate somebody because she gets pregnant. Maybe we better find a way to accommodate them.
Back to Joanne's email, because I think what she was saying was, is that while she obviously feels like getting pregnant isn't a crime, and it of course isn't, that there are people,
not yet,
probably men, probably
who knows what the future will bring,
probably men who are bosses who would see cases like that or run into cases like that and might use it as a reason to, without explicitly stating I'm not going to hire you for that, to discriminate against a woman in an equal situation when it comes down to hiring somebody for the workplace. Do you think there's any validity to Joanne's worrying about that? Not to guys who would do that, but to Joanne as a woman in the workplace worrying about having to deal with that.
Well, it is true that there is still a great deal of discrimination against women who in the workplace when they become pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so women are going to have to stand up and assert their rights. And I think they should seek the advice of counsel in their local area if they think they are being denied a position because they're pregnant.
Would you say they should fight back and win?
In an appropriate case, if they have the evidence to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lawyer can help to assess that evidence, and then they may decide to file with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, mm-hmm. which is free for them to be able to do, or their state fair employment and housing agency, and decide what rights they have and whether there's a probability of success in their case.
I know you won Ms. Tylo a multi-million-dollar settlement there.
Verdict,
I'm sorry.
And then it ended up in a settlement. You're right about that.
Okay. What happened to her career after that?
Great question, because so many people are afraid of retaliation if they do file these cases. But Hunter has gone on to have a wonderful career still. And she's still a successful actor and a wonderful mother and a very sweet and beautiful human being.
The book is called Fight Back and Win, My 30-Year Fight Against Injustice and How You Can Win Your Own Battles. Gloria Allred here on the Paul Harris Show. She will be at the St. Louis Public Library Central West End Branch on Euclid and Lindell tonight at 7, selling and signing the book and talking about many of the things that we've talked about here and many others that we don't have time to get to but are in her book and in her rather remarkable career. We're back with more in just a moment on News Talk 1120 KMOX. In the studio with Gloria Allred, who writes about her 30-year career in the legal profession as a victims' rights attorney in a new book called Fight Back and Win. She'll be at the St. Louis Public Library in the Central West End at Euclid and Lindell tonight at 7 o'clock. I was surprised last year to hear you representing one of the parties in the Schiavo case on a side of the case that I didn't think that you would be involved on.
Well, actually, the way I got involved was very interesting. I had a case many years earlier, and it's in my book, involving Sandy Bardnell, a nurse who was in an intensive care unit and was told to withdraw food and water and life support from a patient who had only been in a coma 5 days. And she wanted to have clear guidelines before she did that and ultimately resigned, and we sued and were successful with that case. But then came the Terri Schiavo case many years later, and someone approached me, Robert Herring, who owns Wealth TV. And Mr. Herring is an extremely altruistic person, and this was right before Terri had food and water withdrawn from her, and he felt that maybe he could help in some way. So he put $1 million in my law firm trust account to be offered to Terri's husband, Michael, if he would give the right to make the health care decisions for Terri to her parents, who, of course, wanted to continue life support and food and water to Terri because they believed she was not in a persistent vegetative state, that she was minimally conscious. And unfortunately, however, the husband did not accept the offer of $1 million. We thought it would have been a win-win for everybody had he accepted it.
See, now, I got to tell you, Gloria, having known what you've been involved in your career, I'm surprised that you were not on Michael Schiavo's side in that case.
Well, I wasn't really on the side of, you know, Michael or the parents. I was representing my client. And my client felt, why the rush to death? He's a great believer in stem cell research, and he felt that perhaps, you know, that, you know, Michael could move on with his life and his new girlfriend and his new children with the $1 million if he took it. And then the parents, of course, could take care of Terri. And perhaps, you know, something could be discovered from stem cell research that might help Terri to regain, you know, some possibility of the life that she once had.
Are there times when someone comes to you wants to hire you, and you say, uh-uh, I'm not on that side of this issue?
Well, it's not so much that I say that as, you know, I have to reject 9 out of 10 requests for me to represent people because, you know, we can only represent so many people and still do a good job. And mm-hmm. it has to be within our area of expertise and it has to be timely and the evidence has to be right. But in any event, I will say that, you know, I've even had people with different political views come to me and say, oh, I'm so sorry that I attacked you in the past because now I need you more than anybody. And I say, I don't really care about, you know, what stand you took politically. All I care about is, am I able to help you?
Mm-hmm.
And
so you would help represent anybody for any cause?
Well, not anybody for anybody, any cause. Being in private practice, I can reject people
mm-hmm.
for any reason, as long as it's not a discriminatory
reason.
So
what's an example of something where you have rejected somebody? Can you?
Well, I never say who calls me or whom I rejected, you know, unless the person gives me permission to disclose. It's mm-hmm. confidential if they contact me.
Okay. I know we've only got a couple of minutes here and so much to talk about. I do have to touch on this case that you were involved in against the Catholic Church about a woman who was raped repeatedly by some priests in the Los Angeles Archdiocese.
Paul, that's an incredible case. And I'll talk a little bit about it tonight, too, at the book signing at the St. Louis Public Library.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about it in Fight Back and Win. It's the case of Rita Mia and the 7 Catholic priests. Rita Mia was sexually abused by 7 Catholic priests and had a baby by one of them. I started this case in the 1980s. And at the time, everybody said, oh, what? This is ridiculous. Priests abusing parishioners? It can't be. And, of course, over the years, we have proven that, in fact, one of the priests was the father of her child. And we have fought back. On the day we filed that lawsuit, all 7 priests mysteriously disappeared from their parishes. And we believe that there may very well have been a cover-up by the Los Angeles Archdiocese, and we have been pursuing this case, and it is an extraordinary case. And as one of the columnists for the LA Times said not long ago, we were the canary in the mine, and no one is laughing now.
I gather you're not an inexpensive firm to hire. So who's been paying you for 20 years in the Rita Mia case?
Well, that's I can never say as to any individual case how we take the case, but I can say many of our cases we take either on a contingency or a limited contingency, or it's a pro bono case.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do what we believe is right. And, you know, we are often fighting these Davida and Goliath battles against the rich, the famous, the powerful, sexual predators, killers, multinational corporations and others. And, you know, despite the odds, we fight back and win. And that's why I've done this book and have little empowerment lessons at the end of each chapter, because I want to share with people how they can change their lives, how they can go from being a victim to being a survivor, to being a fighter for change. That's what I've done in my own personal life as a rape victim, as a single mom years ago who couldn't collect her child support. I've evolved in that way, too. And I think I can share some powerful lessons, I hope, to help people win justice in their own lives.
You can meet Gloria Allred tonight at 7 at the St. Louis Public Library in the Central West End at Euclid and Lindell. There is, of course, a link on my website, harrisonline.com, where you can buy her book just with a couple of clicks. And I thank you and welcome you to St. Louis.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's been a lot of fun, especially to be on your show.
Gloria Allred here on the Paul Harris Show. The book is Fight Back and Win. This is News Talk 1120 KMOX.